Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show, everyone. It's a beautiful Thursday morning down here on the Emerald Coast. And I mean, man, it's just been an awesome week. We had a beautiful cold front move in, and it definitely feels like fall. We have the fish rodeo. The rodeo started today. It's awesome. We're going to have a big celebration this weekend. And as you all know, we'll be leaving next week for Atlanta to be we'll do the show a few times from there if everything works out right. But we're going to the Catalyst Conference, one of the largest leadership and marketing conferences in the world. 15,000 different leaders will be there. We'll have hundreds and hundreds of vendors, literally hundreds of speakers this year. The actual schedule, I just got it in, and it's huge. I mean, it's just phenomenal to see how this one small group of men and women have created such a movement worldwide now. There's people coming in from every continent out there. It's just beautiful. But let's get right down to the show today. I'm on my own. I've got Mark Layton off on appointments. We got Jim and John out doing their thing today. But we're going to be talking about the law of victory. Leaders find a way for the team to win. Now, if you're just joining us, and I know that everybody can't get on the shows all the time, we're studying a book called The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. It's by one of my mentors, John C. Maxwell. Matter of fact, he's one of the founders of the Catalyst Conference. And when you study these laws, you know, outside of my Bible, this may be one of the books that I carry with me all the time, just because I've written it up so much, my boys have read it. It's got powerful concepts and precepts and literally laws that work. And I know a lot of people these days have followed the law of attraction and all that stuff. I'm telling you, folks, these 21 laws, when it comes to leadership, you want to lead a team, you want to lead your life, you just want to lead your family, these are great. But let's look at what really gets a leader out there. Because, you know, usually on a show like this, we talk about the positive side of leadership. But I think we can all agree, not every leader is a positive leader. Not every leader has won. As a matter of fact, you know, if you look back to World War II, Mussolini and all the other leaders of that time, you know, Hitler, all those guys, those were not good leaders, but yet they were leaders that actually used the 21 irrefutable laws, even though they didn't know it. And they went on to dominate in their country. They went in to dominate around the world. And in a lot of cases, a lot of inventions, a lot of stuff we use today came out from that era, but yet they had this flaw. And when crisis came around, they manipulated and they used what should have been positive position. Not just the rank, not just out of fear, but they should have been able to lead their countries to victory. They should have learned that, hey, you know what? Freedom is a God-given right. And yet these leaders failed. See, I believe the finest or the worst hour in a leader's life, when it comes to leading his team or leading her team where they need to go, is in the hour of crisis. And during World War II, there was one little area that was just being bombarded. It was called Great Britain. And what we see is a true leader, a leader that rose up. And if you ever study the English language, Churchill wrote a book called The History of the English-Speaking People. Phenomenal series of books. I mean, this is a whole series. You can get the abridged edition. But Churchill just had a way of being able to be where he needed to be, being able to inspire the people. And in the end, he won. You know, and one of the things that always stand out to me is that here's this country that is blowing the sirens almost every night. Bombs are hitting all over the place. And Churchill could have tucked his tail and ran. They could have just stuck out it out as a little island, you know, but instead he spoke out against what the Nazis were doing. And he started speaking out and letting them know, you know, we cannot put up with this. And when you look at that, you realize that victorious leaders pose an unwillingness to accept defeat. They realize that the alternative to winning is just flat out unacceptable. And I have this happen quite a bit because obviously, as you guys know, you're on my radio shows, you're on our blogs, you're everywhere with us. You know that Jim and I are both very outspoken. We do not hide what we see as our values, as our precepts, as our principles, and what we think is right. So when it comes to looking at different companies or different leaders or different situations, we will boldly say, hey, these are some flaws that we see. And it always amazes me how people say, well, you shouldn't do that. You should be quiet. You shouldn't air your opinion. You know what? Churchill aired his opinion. Churchill went out before his people and made it very clear, we will win. And you know what? They did. They continued to fight. He explained to them that losing was not an option. He called his friends in the United States and he would talk to the leaders over there. And it's amazing when I look at that. Because when you see what's happened, when you see how things worked, you realize that Churchill was a leader. Churchill put his people before himself. Churchill went out and put his whole political career on the line and said, you know what, we have to do something here. We cannot accept defeat. And one of his famous sayings that I just love is, what is our aim? I can answer in one word, victory. Victory at all cost. Victory in spite of all the terror. Victory however long and hard the road may be, for without victory, there'll be no survival. And when leaders will take that battle cry, and they look at their teams in the face of crisis, it could be that your company's going down, it could be that there's volume dropping, it could be that a good leader in your organization decided to move to a new company. Well, don't look at the negative side of that. I mean, it's going to be there. You've got to be realistic. You've got to realize, hey, man, this is going to affect our team. But you don't have to wallow in that self-pity. You don't have to become a dull, negative, disillusioned crybaby. You can look at the situation, get yourself frustrated for a second, and then get back on focus and say, okay, what are we going to do? How are we going to take our team to the next level? Where are we going to go with it from here? Because great leaders always find a way to win. See, when the stakes are high, when you know that it's either win or lose, you figure out a way to accomplish it. I know that over the last few years, America's just gotten tired of the war. Tired of the war in Afghanistan. Tired of the war in Iraq. Tired of the war against terrorism. Tired of the war against the economy. Tired of the war when it comes to real estate. Tired of the debt war in their own families. We're just tired of war, period. Doesn't matter how you look at it. It's a crisis out there. But in everything that I just mentioned, whether it's Afghanistan, whether it's Iraq, whether it's some new country, whether it's over in Europe, it doesn't matter what it is. Whether it's right here at home with terrorism from inside or bad people doing bad things, or kids going hungry, or families homeless. Whatever the case may be that we look at here, let's think for a second. Instead of looking at the negative side, let's look at what would happen if the alternative took place. What happens if we lost these wars? What happened if we just decided that the economy is not worth saving and we decide to just chuck it all? If the American people decided we're not going to stand up and start buying. We're not going to stand up and start taking care of it. We're not going to stand up and go into business for ourselves. You know, in the last year and a half, we've seen more business just crop up. See, that's not the American way. That's not the way of most people. We've got like 60 different countries now listening to this radio show. None of those countries are that way. Every one of them are go-getters. Well, that's what you've got to do as a leader. You've got to look at where you're at, and you've got to say, what can we do to fix this? Now, this is, you got to understand, guys, this is law number, what law number are we on, guys? 15. Okay, so there's 14 other laws before this one that tie into this. The law of the process, the law of the lid, the law of the inner circle. See, all this ties into where we're at. And if you apply all 15 laws, and you look at victory is the only option, then your mind is going to start being stimulated. See, something, let's go into a little bit of science now for a second. The brain cannot differentiate fantasy from reality. So when you feed it fear, which is false expectations appearing real, you've heard Jimmy say this over and over. When you do that, your mind starts to look at that negative. So all of a sudden, instead of your adrenaline pumping, your anxiety starts to pump. And the fear takes over, and you become paralyzed. But if you slow down for a second, you realize that 95% of everything we fear never takes place in the first place. Then all of a sudden you start to realize, hey, we can make this happen. We may not have all the answers. As the leader, you may not have all the answers. But that's why you form a team around you. You know, going back to John Maxwell, the actual author of this book, I followed John's career since the mid-90s. And it just it intrigues me to watch him because he's written books and written books, and I've read his books before that, but I really started following him and allowed him to mentor in my life in the mid-90s. And I watched John go from being a pastor of a church where it had about 1,000 members in it in San Diego. And there came a time in his career when he had to decide, do I want to continue to pastor churches, or do I go out there and I explode what I think God has for me, and I go out and I help build leaders worldwide. And he looked and he looked and he made that decision, and he moved his organization to Atlanta. But one of the deciding factors in that was that the church hadn't been growing. It had become stagnant at 1,000. Now, he talked to all his staff, and a lot of his staff went with him. They said, we want to be a part of this. We're moving to Atlanta with you. So he took them with him. In a very short period of time, the pastor that took over his old church, the church had grown to over 2,000 people. Now, I don't know how big it is. It's huge. But see, John even had a law of a lid, couldn't get it over 1,000. He left, somebody else came in, the church grew. That's a compliment when you think about it. He goes to Atlanta, brings his staff with him. In a very short period of time, his staff starts to spread their wings. And one by one, they either go out and start their own ministries, they go out and become parts of other ministries, and new staff members come in. John starts rebuilding an inner circle, a tight team. Didn't get rid of his old team. They're still part of what he does. Everybody's part of Catalyst. All of a sudden, he brings in this young, strapping, just visionary named Gabe Lyons. Man, Gabe's just rocking the organization. You know, they're cranking things. They're doing all kinds of stuff. And one day, Gabe says, you know what? I feel a calling. I'm going to go out and start the Fermi Project. I want to go out and become relevant. I want to find out why people don't like Christianity in the world today, why it's being made fun of in Hollywood. All of a sudden, one by one, they leave and a new group comes in. Now, here's why I'm sharing this with you, because we're looking at the law of victory. Every time one of John's top lieutenants came into him and said, I want to go out and be a general, he could have gone home to Margaret and said, oh, man, I don't know what I did. I've got leaders leaving the nest. I got people wanting to take off. They're wanting to do their own thing. Nobody wants to follow me. He could have just become a dull, negative, disillusioned crybaby. But instead, he saw this as victory. He saw it as the influence being spread to more and more people. He looked at his vision that God had given him and said, wow, we're reaching more leaders because these leaders are going out and they're hitting other areas that we've never been able to touch before. See, that's the key here, folks. So when you're looking at your network marketing organization and you realize your leaders are leaving, you realize they're taking a piece of you with them. They're spreading that influence. If you have been a leader worth following, then you have raised up these leaders to go out and do it. That's pure duplication. You know, one of the things I say that's a myth in network marketing is duplication, because most people don't understand it. Most people teach duplication as do as I say, not as I did. But every leader I've ever found in network marketing followed a leader to a certain point, and then they went out and they started their own team. They started their own vision. They started their own mission. That's what duplication's all about. You allow the leaders to grow. We use a lot in leadership the analogy of an eagle kicking the eaglets out of the nest. Because when an eaglet's ready to leave the nest, the mama pops him up on the butt and kicks him out over the edge. Poor little thing's flapping his wings thinking, good gosh, what'd she just do to me? But before they crash to the ground, mama or daddy swoops down, picks them up on their wing, puts them back up until those wings get strong enough for them to fly on their own. That's why I get so excited when I have leaders of mine that challenge my leadership and then they go out and they do something on their own. That is so cool. But the best leaders will feel compelled to rise above the challenges. They won't get that dull, negative, disillusioned attitude. And what they'll do is they'll do everything in their power to achieve victory for their people. Because in their view, leadership is a responsibility. Losing is unacceptable. Passion is unquenchable. Creativity is essential. Quitting is unthinkable. Their commitment is unquestionable. And victory is inevitable. Let me read this again because I think this is so powerful out of this book. This is what leaders think in the middle of a crisis, that their leadership is responsible. They don't try to blame somebody else for what's going on. They train and they let their team know that losing is unacceptable. They don't even look at that. We're going to win one way or the other. We may have to go around, over, blow up the obstacle, whatever it is, we're going through it. Passion is unquenchable. Creativity is essential. They call in on their inner circle and they say, we got to figure out a way to make it through this thing. Quitting is unthinkable. You know, for years and years and years, I always sign, never give up. I don't believe quitting's an option. Lately, a mentor of mine, Art Meekin, said, Troy, it's time for you to change. You've outgrown that. Find something new. Find something that is your life today, now that you've made it to the next level in leadership. So now I'm starting to sign everything, living an epic adventure. We'll do a training on that in the upcoming months. Commitment is unquestionable. The team knows that the leader's committed to the end. If the vision is worth pursuing, then it's worth being committed all the way. Then victory becomes inevitable. Folks, this is the key to the law of victory. Now, there's three components to victory, and this is important that we get these. Get a pen and paper out and write this down. Number one, there's got to be unity in the vision. Teams will only succeed when the players are unified on the vision, no matter how much talent or the potential is. If the leader, if everybody is not focused on the vision, if they're focused on themselves, if they're focused on who's going to beat the boss, who's going to be the number one kingpin, all that crap, you're never going to make it. The vision has to be bigger than any single individual, period. It's the only way that makes it work. I see this in our own family. We've got 6 kids, and all of them have different personalities. We've got 2 beautiful grandbaby girls that we're taking care of right now. None of this, even though the little ones think everything revolves around them, it all revolves around what's best for the family. We are a unit. Now, we're Southern, and the Hatfields and McCoys. I mean, we're pretty clannish down south here. We believe in the brand. So whatever that name is on that family, I'm telling you, we stick together. But it's got to be about the vision. If one person goes out and wants to do something on their own, they know they've got support, but they're probably going to have to pay a price, good or bad. See, there's got to be unity in the vision. Everybody has to be focused on that. It's a win if everybody's moving in the right direction. You know, one of the things we learned in the Marine Corps early on is that when you're marching that very first day they've shaved all your hair, you've gotten rid of your personality, everybody's a Marine, everybody's what we call the maggot. You're a nobody. You're going to earn the right to wear the brand. And they'd start telling everybody to march. There wasn't a cotton-picking person in that formation that could do it right. Everybody was going different directions. They were moving here, there, and yonder. I mean, it sucked. But 12 weeks later, there were unity in the vision. And you could have 1,000 men on that parade deck with 100 different drill instructors. And when your drill instructor spoke, he could be clear across the parade deck, and you knew that voice, you knew the command, and you went with it. Has to be unity in the vision. Diversity in the skills is the second point. There's 3 of them, remember. Unity in the vision. Now, number 2, diversity in the skills. You do not want everybody to be able to do the same thing. How would a football team be if they were all quarterbacks? What would happen to a baseball team if they were all pitchers? I mean, think about this. It's a screwed up mess. What kind of political campaign would be run if everybody on the team wanted the top job as president? Wouldn't work. There's got to be diversity in skills. A team doesn't win the championship if every player is working with different agendas. You've got to have the different skills, but you've got to be unified in the vision. You've got to look at the best players that you have. You make sure that they are at their best. Because when you have a blind spot, somebody else on the team will find it. Their skills, their talent, whatever the case may be, they're going to see it and they're going to move forward. That's the name of the game. That's how you know you're going in the right direction. Number three, a leader dedicated to victory and raising players to their full potential is what causes victory. Let me read that again. A leader dedicated to victory and raising the player to their potential. You've got unity in vision, diversity in skills, and a leader dedicated to the victory and helping his leaders become better leaders. That's the key here. If the victory that you're seeing is you winning a lot of money, it isn't going to work. And yes, because this is a call where we work with a lot of direct marketing companies, and we know we got small business owners on here, I want to use this. The victory can't be $1 million. The victory can't be $1 billion. The victory just can't be more sales. Those are ambiguous type of things. Once you have the money, it'll be gone. You don't even know what more sales means. $1 billion, you probably aren't even doing $100,000 a year. Why are you worried about $1 billion? You got to make sure that the victory is attainable. You've got to make sure that it's specific. This year, we're going to increase our team by 12 brand new leaders. And each of those leaders are going to be earning on a part-time basis $1,000 a month. Whatever the case may be, focus on that. But make it very specific. If it's a team goal, if it's a big team goal, maybe there's a big campaign going on, big championship, we're getting into convention season with all the companies. You're rallying the team to say, we want to be the number one team going across stage. By golly, then to be the number one team, you got to have the number one players. Not player, but players. You know, I just watched a video the other day from a company called Financial Destination looking at their convention, and it amazed me how many of the leaders got up there that had won $75,000, $5,000, $10,000. And they looked out across the audience, and one in particular who had won the $75,000 grand prize said, "This isn't about me. This check wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for that team in the field." And that team in the field won all these other little bitty checks because they were kicking butt. See, the victory was huge. The whole team won. The law of victory is the only business that the leader should be in. It's the leader that sets the whole mindset for the team. Guys, right now, you may just be the leader of one. Every morning you should be getting up and you should look at your 3x5 cards that we've talked about in the past. You should be reading what the victory is and what you're going to accomplish and why you're going to be there. You should be envisioning what life is going to be like when you can quit your job if that's what you want to do, or when you pay off your mortgage, or when you've gotten your wife the surgery that she needs. Whatever the case is, whatever your victory is, you've got to be focused on that. That's the key here. That's why I get so excited about all this. You know, we could do other things every day. Every day we could be finding something else that we wanted to do. But that's not what we want. That's not what it's about. Because we know in the end it's about raising up leaders. You know, I look at one of the stories that John puts in his book, and it's about Southwest Airlines. And I always love this because when you look at Southwest Airlines, it started in 1971. Now, this is one of the, if not the, most successful airline in history. They've never been bankrupt. They always make a profit. They're very forward, visionary thinking. And here's just an indication. In 1971, they had 4 airplanes. They had 195 employees. They took care of about 108,000 passengers. They only served 3 cities. They had 17 flights a day. The company's net worth, the equity to its shareholders, were $3.3 million, and the total company's assets were $22 million. Now, in 2006, when John was re-releasing this book, listen to these numbers, and remember, from 1971 to 2006, how many airlines can you think of that went bankrupt? I don't even know, you know, TWA, Braniff. You know, American Airlines, all of them have gone bankrupt at one time or another. Some of them are totally out of business today, like Brannan. They've gone bankrupt twice now that I think about it. But listen to this. This is amazing to me. In 2006, their flight had their fleet, the amount of planes that they owned had gone from 4 to 468. The amount of employees had gone from 195 to over 30,000. Instead of carrying 108,000 passengers a year, they were doing 88.4 million passengers a year. Instead of serving three cities, they were serving 51. Instead of doing 17 flights a day, they were doing 3,100 flights a day. Instead of the shareholder equity only being $3.3 million, it was $6.6 billion. Their total assets had gone from $22 million to $14 billion. Do you realize that every year, Southwest Airlines is voted as one of the best employers to work for? The passengers voted as one of the best airlines to fly on? See, the victory in the minds of the founders and the owners of Southwest Airlines was to become the best at what they did and make the passenger their number one asset. And that permeated down through their employees, and their employees came partners, and they told them, use your creativity, build on this. I can remember in the 70s when they had the hot pants because all their flight attendants wore hot pants. Thank goodness now that we have more male attendants, we're still not wearing those hot pants. But see, this is the key. Guys, if you want the law of victory to apply in your life, there's three things you got to do. The first step is you got to practice the law of victory. You have to start taking full responsibility for the success of the team, for the department, for the organization, whatever it is you're leading. You've got to take responsibility for the success. That doesn't mean that you tell everybody, I'm the one that caused the team to be this way. That means that it's your responsibility to make sure they're moving in the right direction. When the team succeeds, you give credit to your team. If it fails, you take full responsibility for it. That's what a leader does. Focus on that. Your passion has to be high. Your dedication has to be unquestioned. When your team sees that, no matter what you go through, they'll be there with you. Second thing you have to do, if you're dedicated to leading your team to victory, you'll be able to achieve it only if you have the right people on the team. This goes back to that inner circle. You have to make sure your leaders are the right people in the right positions doing the right thing. It's mandatory. And the third thing, this is critical. Do a little informal research and find out what's important to each of your team members. Ask them what they want to achieve personally. This is going to help you make sure that everything that they want to achieve ties into the victory that you're looking at. Ask them to describe what the purpose or the mission is of the team. See, if you get a diversity of answers, you know you need to work on the communication to make sure that everybody understands the vision. But if everybody says, here's what we're going to accomplish, here's what we want to accomplish, this is where we fit into the vision, this is what we're doing, then you know you're on the right track. Listen, I know a lot of people out there want to preach on leadership and tell you always be positive. Don't ever. As a matter of fact, I had a gentleman that I'm good friends with, and he writes on there that people that criticize aren't really leaders. Well, you know what? I'm a pragmatic. I'm a firm believer that you've got to look at everything with a critical eye. You've got to make sure that you understand everybody on your team and where you're going with it. When you see something that's not right, don't try to be politically correct. Stand up. Look out there and say, you've got to change this. It's got to be fixed. This is wrong. This isn't right. We're not going to achieve it if we don't do it right. You know, if every doggone coach that's ever coached a doggone professional or minor or high school team stood around being politically correct saying, oh, well, you'll do better next time. We'll make it. Don't worry. Oh, your toe hurts. We wouldn't have sports the way we see it today. If we had commanders out there that said, well, you know, if we don't win this battle, it's okay. Maybe we'll win the next one. Well, if we don't win this war, don't worry about it. No. If we had fathers and mothers out there saying, well, I'm not going to worry about where the next meal comes from. You know, I'm sure that a couple of meals won't hurt us any, and they don't worry about their bills. They don't worry about any of that. It wouldn't happen. You've got to be a leader willing to stand up. You've got to take a stand for what you believe in. You've got to fight for the vision. You've got to have an undedicated focus, just like Winston Churchill did. That way, when the bombs are raining down on you, when the naysayers are out there saying you're an awful leader, people will understand you're a leader worth following. Folks, tomorrow's Feedback Friday. Have a fantastic Thursday, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.